Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and I am so excited to turn on the mic today and talk with you about the future of construction that we passionately call system-built lifestyle here on the Art of Construction. And to do that, we wanted to go out into the globe and find some of the people that have been early adopters and pulling in and actually doing and building factories and talking about systemizing construction that is traditionally called modular or manufacturing. And we're not big on the M word, but the main message that I want to convey to you, audience, is that today we're going to be talking about lessons learned and how we can all learn and grow as lifelong learners to move system-built lifestyle forward. And how is this going to benefit you is that let's go and meet an early adopter that has jumped full in and went out and did a factory pretty much overnight. It's amazing, his story. And that's Anthony with B. Marco Structures. And to do that, I wanted to bring in our executive director, Matt McMullen, who has been working around volumetric and different modular designs to execute. And I want to have him bring his perspectives in. So welcome back to the podcast, Matt, to talk about system build lifestyle. What do you want to bring to the table here today?
Well, hey, thanks for having me back in, man. It's been a little while, and have loved all the podcasts that you've been on. They've been incredibly informational. So, you know, what I want to talk to Anthony about is a few things, you know, basically like four things. Shift from containers. Originally, they started out with shipping containers and went to volumetric modules. So kind of just chatting with that, was it a, you know, human scale and dimension decision or something they found in the process that didn't work? Want to talk about challenges too of starting up a factory, you know, labor pool availability and cost. Do you automate or not? That's a big topic right now if people have been following it. Ideal size of a factory line engineering layout, and then, you know, the thing everybody's struggling with right now, supply chain and vendor identification. But are there other challenges that he sees? Third thing, how do you optimize for shipping and logistics, right? That's a challenge, whether you're doing on-site or off-site construction. Then the final thing, Devin, I want to talk about is like, what are the skill sets required for a successful factory management team if you're running a factory?
That's some big stuff. And with a guy that's lived it, you're in for a treat. Lock and load, tribe. What's your favorite beverage?
I'm into water, to be honest with you.
Oh, come on. You're a crazier guy than water.
My parents didn't let me have a lot of soda, just in parties and what have you. So I'm not big on that. Honestly, it's going to have to be water.
Devin. All right. Well, tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
I think of it more of the favorite place that I haven't traveled to yet, but I'm not going to do this to you two times in a row. So I'm going to say Santorini, probably. It's a Greek island. And there was a volcano that erupted and kind of sheared the whole island. And there's this beautiful kind of edge to it and that insanely immediate change in elevation. So it just looks over the Mediterranean and it's very pretty.
Awesome. And what is your passion that you do outside of volumetric, modular, all these things that what we call system built lifestyle that we're passionate to talk about? What do you do outside of that in the Art of Construction?
I want to say, you know, skiing. I'm in love with skiing and I'm trying to get more back into it, which I did this year. I don't know if that counts as a full-on hobby, but I'll make sure that the next time we talk, it's going to have counted and I'm going to have skied a lot.
There you go. Where's the favorite place you've went skiing before?
I hate to say Greece again, because that's where I was born and raised and spent 18 years of my life. There's some cool mountains there. I really want to make it over to Denver. The only place I've skied in the U.S. is North Carolina, so I definitely don't want to comment on that at this point, because the United States has a lot more to offer than that.
Well, I if you want to come to Colorado, I have a few connections there. I'll be at Beaver Creek this weekend, which I'm really excited about. So we have some great mountains here, and that's what this Global Megaphone is all about and why we kind of started this way. So let's dive in and let's talk about what is your story, Anthony, that led you to becoming the CEO of B Marco Structures?
Yeah, absolutely, Devin. So yeah, the whole thing kind of started with when I was in high school. I was in Greece for that, and I took a summer school at Stanford between my junior and senior years, and that's when I fell in love with California. So when it came time to apply to all the colleges around the world, I picked California. So the quote best place that accepted me was UC San Diego. So that's where I ended up doing my mechanical engineering degree. Fast forward almost 5 years later, and I meet Boris, the co-founder of B Marco Structures. So he had this crazy idea, right? He goes, I want to start a modular construction company. And I had no idea what construction was. I didn't know what drywall was, nothing, right? I was a little stronger on statics and dynamics at that point, not so much in the art of construction. And he goes, listen, 2006, I built a soccer stadium, and we did it with precast double T. And so essentially he began to explain to me how they started construction on the entire stadium February 1st, and they played their first game. It's a soccer stadium. They played the first game June 1st. So he's like, this has to be the future of construction. This is so much, just so much less painful, so much more streamlined. And that's pretty much all he had to say. Now, starting off in 2014, we had a very generic idea of what we wanted to do. It was more like, you know, we know that system build is the future. We just, let's start with shipping containers. It's a lower risk proposition. Those are volumetrized over in China, you know, they're dimensionally correct, and start outfitting them. And so that's how we got our foot in the door. Fast forward two and a half years later, we become profitable and we say, okay, there's a lot of, and that might answer some of Matt's questions too. They were in dimensionally very appropriate for other functions, and I'll elaborate on that later. But essentially, we started doing steel modular buildings, so building from scratch, more for the industrial sector, data centers and e-houses, electrical houses, if you will. And in 2019, I remember being in this World of Modular event. It's an annual event. It's a pretty big deal. It's awesome, actually. And Marriott was having a presentation talking about this hotel that they built modular. And we're like, damn, you know, this is big. You know, there's a really good go-to-market approach here with system build. And so that took us on the path of starting, frankly, a second factory for wood modular. And in order for you to be able to deal with Marriott, you need to be in multifamily, essentially. You know, you need to show some sort of track record. So that's what led us in essentially building our first apartment project, which was last year, 190 apartment units, and starting what we call a modular factory. And I'm sure that there's one too many M words here, modular factory, and I can elaborate on that later, is where we prefabricated all of our cranes, all of our jigs, and everything was boltable and adjustable, and it's able to be moved. But I can talk about that a little more later. And yeah, so this was last year. So we're in a position today to build three different product types. And of course, there's a lot more in the future that we're going to be talking about later.
Awesome. So the why of this, of why you did it, was somebody who had funding came to you and said, hey, your engineering background, the future of construction is in using system built options that started in the concrete portion of a soccer stadium. Is that accurate?
It is. And it's funny, Devin, because, you know, they say one guy had the money, the other guy had the brains. Boris is one of the smartest people I know. So I joke that Boris had both the money and the brains.
There you go. But you had the passion to jump into this thing, right? So
absolutely.
Matt, let's get into some of the things of peel back the layers of how we got here is his story of he's done different options within the system built lifestyle to unwind that.
Yeah, and Anthony, you're correct. We try to avoid the M word and also the MF word, you know, which is modular factory. I had people on the edge of their seats there for a second. What we've started using is also two terms that are super helpful. One is offsite and onsite, right? And so offsite can involve, you know, volumetric, panelization, all those kinds of things. And then onsite, right, is just, you know, you're actually at the project site and you're making stuff happen there because that's where people are going to inhabit the building. So when you know, you've been in this for a while now. When you look at it, what do you see people in the industry doing incorrectly with offsite construction?
Yeah, so that's a long one to answer. So I'm going to go a little 30,000 foot view here for a second. So it's all about how you're going to integrate offsite construction to onsite. You know, talking about offsite construction that doesn't need onsite or doesn't interact with onsite is bogus, right? I mean, buildings are built on real estate that's fixed. And so you always have that challenge of integrating offsite construction to a site. So whether that means that you're going to have a team of 50, a team of 100 who are going to inherit essentially offsite prefabricated elements, whether they're panelized, right, two-dimensional, whether they're volumetric, three-dimensional, you know, there's very clear and precise installation instructions, regardless of what you're installing. So I've seen it implemented wrong when there is a dichotomy between different teams, between offsite and onsite construction. But that's condition one. And condition two is true, where the two either don't understand what they need to do to integrate, or they don't care enough to do so. And I'm going to close up by saying the way I've done it, I've seen it very successfully today in the construction market. It does happen is when you have a subcontractor, like HVAC is easy, guys, right? Like a mechanical subcontractor deciding to prefabricate on their own penny and their own decision. And then it's the same people doing offsite and onsite. That works, in my opinion, brilliantly today.
So, Anthony, I want to dive in a little bit on your conversation about shipping containers and you know, your evolution into then doing volumetric modules, because it was a similar progression that I went through just as a designer. You know, the new cool thing was shipping containers, you know, and Dwell Magazine always had like at least two or three projects every month, maybe every 4 months, you know, on shipping containers. And I really looked at it and I realized, you know what, that the human dimension was incorrect, right? It was, these things were 8 feet. And so to get any kind of like meaningful, you know, bedroom space or anything like that, or even, you know, meaningful great room space, you had to stack three of these things together. And so I kind of really quickly abandoned the idea that I would use shipping containers as a grid-based module for any kind of single-family or multifamily residential. But that's from a designer standpoint. As a modular factory, yeah, there's that MF word again. As a system-built, you know, factory owner, what was your evolution?
Matt, it's going to take us as many years to stop saying the word, the M words, as it is to start utilizing the system built lifestyle. And this is like, I am on this passion where Anthony talks about World of Modular as this amazing go-to place, but on the other side of the fence, the stigmatism, right? And so that's really what we're just talking about, breaking down these barriers of you learn by doing, because you think about, well, if it's just this huge box on a shipping container, they already know how to put those on trucks, and it's already all these things that make sense, right? So that's where I'm really intrigued to listen to you guys talk about and be that disruptor and influencer along the way of learning how and why you shift from one building type to another and blending what Anthony talked about of you drop all these boxes on a site, but the people don't have never seen boxes before. That becomes a real challenging handoff, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really like how Matt puts it. Not the MF word, but the human scale to containers, you know. And then my brain started going, what if you had a human lay, you know, along the width of the container? You know, you almost hit your head if you do that. And I'm just kind of playing all these geometrical arrangements in my head. So Matt is absolutely right. And unfortunately, he's in the minority of some of the designers I've interacted with. A lot of architects do love containerized. And I'll tell you the truth. And here's my answer after, you know, saying all that. The construction industry is massive, guys. So there's just so much out there that has to be built. So many different building types, product types, as I think of them, and different ways of building them. And so containerized makes a lot of sense for something that's relocatable, for something that you need extremely quickly. So such as we actually at the onset of COVID back March 2020, we were contracted by the state of Georgia to build two temporary hospitals for COVID. And I don't want to get into the COVID, no COVID conversation, just like I don't go into politics. But essentially, we were able to complete two hospitals with 21 hospital rooms. They were almost ICUs, ICU spec almost, but they had the positive pressure in the corridors and what have you. But we built all of that in 4 weeks from start, no design, no nothing, to finish, and spending 2.8 weeks in the factory. So anyway, coming back, we realized, Matt, that there's more building types that we wanted to build, and containers were going to cater to just an aspect of a building type. And so that's why we kind of seeped into steel modular and now wood modular as well.
So Anthony, I want to take advantage of the fact that you're a systems built factory owner, right? And really try to bring sort of your experience of running a factory on a day-to-day basis to the forefront so that our audience can take advantage of your wisdom. So I'm just going to throw out like, you know, 6-7 things here and just have you kind of riff on each one, you know, like a little bit of a speed round kind of thing. So first thing is labor pool availability and cost. You know, what are you guys experiencing right now? What do you see moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Matt. And I should have done this sooner, but the O word, the owner word, actually, we don't really use that word. It's kind of a passive thing. So we think value is generated through management operations. And so you know, as the CEO and the operator, I can definitely answer these questions for you. Labor pool. So you know, it's funny. We're talking about, are you going to build stick or are you going to build a system built? And that labor pool is going down every day. And the average age of a construction worker, I'm sure those are topics of discussions in most of your previous podcasts, I can only imagine. Soon it's not going to be a matter of if you go system built, it's going to be when. That labor pool is being drained. Being able to do work offsite allows you to streamline and make tasks much more repetitive, as we can all imagine. And so it allows you to pull from, you know, what we call it shorthand here is the McDonald's pool, and then just train them. And it just makes all the difference in the world. Automate or not, I can talk about this for an hour, but I won't do that to you guys. I see Devin is already getting tired. I'm just
no way, no way.
I'm just teasing you. So automation, look, I think there's too many folks out there who who pre-automate. So we call it premature optimization. And doing so, I think Tesla did that as well, right? And then Elon Musk admitted it. I think that you need to know what you don't know. And too many times we've seen money people pour so much money into automating something and then it's not what they wanted to do. So I think you want to crawl, then walk, then run. And I gotta say that automation comes in the running part. So we have not automated to a great extent yet at all, because we're playing around and fine-tuning what we're doing, to be just quite frank with you. Ideals, go ahead.
Yeah, and that's spot on, where we just released a podcast with Offsite Tech with Dwight and the team, talking about how humans work with robots. If you automate something that's not 100% processed, and now you're just going to do something that you shouldn't have done even faster. And exactly. Go back and listen to that podcast, to where we have to augment, but you have to augment in a way that is systemized. And there's a wonderful podcast that we just released with Offsite Tech about that very thing, of his 40 years of working in robotics, that I challenge, if you go back to the podcast with Gary Fleischer, where we talk about where he doesn't like to use the correlation of automobiles to construction, but it's the best thing to show about how they've built that kit of parts in automobiles to where the standard and the lean times and all that kind of stuff of how it works. We have to do the same thing with construction, in my opinion, but don't hear it from Matt or I or Anthony. Hear it from a guy that's been working with robots for 40 years with construction the past 10. Matt, what's next?
You know, this is something I've been interested in, because when Devin first mentioned that we were going to be chatting with you, you know, we were talking about ideal size of factory, right? And so you've got Autoval, where they've spent loads of money. You've got a recent one, Fading West in Colorado, where they've spent, you know, significant amount of money. But he mentioned the word pop-up factory with you. And so if you could talk a little bit about what you consider for Bimarco, the ideal size of your factory as you guys look to potentially grow across the U.S.
Let me speak to the ideal size, and I can maybe speak to another concept of a pop-up factory. So the ideal size of a factory, man, you know, as much as you hate that answer, but I know you as the architect, you've used that before. It depends. You know, it really depends. So it has to do with throughput. You start from the end. So what do you want to produce per unit time? You know, how many stations are you going to have? And of course, are we talking, you know, a panelized factory, a volumetric factory? So there isn't any kind of one fits all in this case. Now, one of our factories is at 86,000 square feet. One is at 50,000 square feet. And so, those are the ideal sizes for us. It just really depends. You know, in our conversation prior to recording, we touched upon something I said, which piqued your interest. It was a pop-up factory. And you know, I couldn't begin to explain that without the MF word, the modular factory. And so prior to starting our wood modular factory, we said, what if we went away with spending so much money in transportation? What if we set up a factory near site, right? So, you know, the Amazons of the world, they call it last mile. But we can call it last 10 miles or last 15 miles. And frankly, we did just that. So as we started up that wood modular factory, we actually prefabricated all of our jigs, all of our cranes. We had the entire layout of the factory down to, I mean, what can I tell you? Down to where the nails are stored. I mean, everything was there. Down to, of course, the flow path of the forklift. All of the dumpsters shown inside the plant. And so we had done all this work so that we can stand up, outfit this entire factory in a millisecond. and massively challenging. We could do an entire podcast about that. The conclusion is, outside of the challenges, it allowed us to be so close to the site, which gave us some massive advantages. So by the time you ship those boxes, the finished boxes to the site, you know, the locals are going to have some questions. The GC and their subs are going to have questions. So they would frequently visit our plant and get anything they needed answered. So it was tremendously helpful to just have that proximity to the final site. Now I just want to kind of touch upon that pop-up factor, and if you want to bring it up later, you can, but that's the extent to which I'll answer it now.
No, and that's good. It's you know, the reason it intrigues me is like, you know, if you go to Department of Transportation, you know, they're doing a highway project, right? So they'll have a concrete batch plant, which is like a pop-up plant, or they'll have an asphalt plant that's a pop-up plant, and they'll use that to reduce that last mile and actually, you know, reduce truck miles and all that sort of stuff so they can quickly move down the highway and get that thing out. So that's why it intrigued me when I heard that, because there is precedent, you know, in the construction industry for something like that. One thing that you did mention, though, was, I guess I'll call it workflow process and factory line engineering layout. That to me is something that is critical to the productivity of the factory. Can you talk about how you guys have approached that issue?
Absolutely. I cannot overstate the importance of a layout. If you want to do anything offsite with any kind of production element to it, the layout is king. And you can never have enough detail into your layout. I mean, you cannot. So let me kind of just briefly explain what's required for you to do a layout. You know, let's say that, I don't know, you're a developer, you're a GC, you know, you're hearing the M word and it's like, I'm tired of hearing it. And I want to, you know, I want to do it, and we're going to call it something else other than the M word. but you need to understand exactly what you're building. You need to understand what's your floor system. I mean, is it going to be I-joist, open joist? What's the length of those? Are they going to come pre-cut? You know, how much value add prefabricated are you going to do? Are you going to do 2x12 floor joists? I'm just focused on wood material right now. Is that 2x12 going to come 16 feet? Is it going to be pre-cut by your vendor? I mean, I can't give you, you know, enough examples, right? And where is that going to be pulled from? And where are you going to pre-cut it? And what machine is going to pre-cut it? And how are the drawings going to make it to that station? Station, you know, pre-cut, you know, wood choice. You know, I mean, are you going to send that through a computer? You know, are you going to give that out, you know, paper copy? How are you going to, you know, there's changes. I mean, there's changes. So how are you going to regulate revisions? You know, again, I could talk for hours on that, but this is so much. I mean, you need to become one with what you're trying to build at scale, because as Devin said, you start building something you don't know, you know, or if you build something wrong, you know, you're trying to go fast, you're just going to have more of the mistakes. So, you know, building a factory, everybody should be aware of this. You're trying, you know, your aim is to go at massive speed, just like, you know, the faster you go, the better. So anything that might go wrong, just anything, is really going to hurt you, you know? So you just have to plan. Labor pools, talks about material, talks about everything.
Sounds like dating a supermodel almost, you know, you're hoping it all goes well and you're trying to get things moving quickly, and then it could all go to hell in a handbasket. Well, hey, so now that you've scared the living bejesus out of everyone on our podcast, let me ask another hard question. So now you've got all that figured out, right? You've got your factory line figured out. You've got where your supply is coming in. You've got your optimized workforce. You've got all that stuff.
But yes, Matt, the windows just went from 12-week lead time to 52 weeks.
Yeah. How do you find your vendors and identify those people? And then how are you going to deal with the supply chain issues that everybody's dealing with?
Yeah. So I'll be honest with you guys. What happened is we signed this very first deal. We started a factory from scratch. The last thing that we were expecting was for the market to turn the way it did. So we were caught. I mean, I'm not even talking with our pants down. I mean, it was skin, like pants, t-shirts, like we were not expecting that, to be honest. But it's different when you don't expect it and you have to build a factory and procure everything for the first time and set up vendor relationships to someone who's more established. And it's like, okay, I know exactly what I'm buying. You know, I had an avenue. And so that was just a massive, massive challenge. And I can't begin to explain to you how disruptive it is. And honestly, you have to figure out a way to make it work. So, I mean, the Windows is a good example. That's exactly what happened to us, right?
But here's where I want to challenge us all to say, this is a perfect learning opportunity. This is not an on-site or an off-site thing. It doesn't matter the time value of money, whether you said about speed to get stuff out the door or just sitting on a job site with the elements or the homeowners renting somewhere else waiting to get this done. It doesn't matter what it is. When construction stops, emotions take over. And supply chain is what's moved that to the top of the charts that we talked about recently on episode 250, where Ken Semler talked about how supply chain has moved into number one, where we started this conversation around labor, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we've been talking a lot lately about labor shortages in the construction industry. I mean, try adding, you know, material to that. And anybody out there who's listening to Art of Construction or anybody who is affiliated with construction one way or another, what do you have? Material and labor. So now it's like, okay, labor is hot and material is hot. So honestly, there's a lot.
What are
of
we doing here?
Right, you are Kevin. Just Anthony. You are just full of good news right now. I'm loving it.
It has frustrated a lot of people, including, you know, me personally. And we need to find solutions, right? So complaining is one thing, but how do we find solutions for all of us?
Just let people know as a listener.
I didn't know you're jiving in. I'm just going to leave this on. I'm trying to guess the.
I just want to do a quick public service announcement right now for our listeners and just say that we will climb out of this hole that we're in right now and get back up to the positive side. But before we do that, I would like to ask you one more question, Anthony.
Jeez, Matt, we're going deep here. All right. All right.
I mean, you're fully engaged, you know, in the systems built lifestyle and the systems built production process. Are there any other things that people should consider, you know, factory owners who are listening around the US, around the world right now? Is there anything else that they should consider besides the stuff that we've talked about that you've personally experienced or seen?
Sure. I'll give you a tough one, a tough cookie, which has to do with, you can think of a factory as something that's hungry, right? And the more people you have, the hungrier it gets for product. So let's say you're humming along. So backlog is very important, okay? And committed backlog, whether the company chooses to do that with down payments, whether they do it with LOI. Of course, there's a better way to do it than other ways, which is money in the bank, of course. And the moment that something hits a snag, right? Oh, the zoning. Oh, the closing. Oh, this. Oh, that. So, you know, we have a very generic conversation, so I don't have to go into details, because depending on what kind of factory you have, different things affect you. But just, you know, if you build any kind of size into your factory, 50 workers, 100 workers, 200 workers, that is very hungry, that organization. And the moment you skip even one day or something goes wrong, there's that's what can put you down really quickly. And so it's about making sure that the analogy between the hunger, right, of that organization and the food there, you don't want to starve that organization out of product. And that's another way of saying, Matt, that I'm stating the obvious, that overhead, right? Overhead is high when you're doing a factory. You know, GCs run with subs, right? That's the model. That's the trusted model for a lot of time now. They don't have them on payroll. So that's one thing that's massively important I wanted to sneak in here for the listeners.
I think that's really, really great what you said, because, you know, and developers will relate to this, is, you know, with risk comes reward, right? But the risk is great. And so, yeah, anytime you're scaling up and you're not shedding that risk, you know, like a GC will do with subcontractors, or CM, not at risk, you end up potentially having the opportunity for things to not go so well. So, yeah, thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, the part I want to make sure we highlight on of the lessons learned of this podcast is that you mentioned, you know, when it comes to logistics, you said that last mile or that last 10 miles. I want you to really talk through from the cycle of the soccer stadium that, you know, in months started to people playing soccer, to then going down this journey of multiple options of different plants around system build lifestyle. What's your take to the tribe to listen in about how do you truly optimize for shipping and logistics around this stuff?
Yeah, so I'm going to say this, Devin, and maybe you've covered this in previous podcasts, but offsite is kind of where the industry is. It's more of a single company undertaking. It hasn't been mainstreamed, you know, and there's a lot of kind of sporadic effort in the industry right now. And so, you know, successful logistics channels, if you will, do appear. However, it's very sporadic to certain companies, and there's so many different ways to do offsite. So there's so many different ways for each case to set up your logistic channels. I would say that being near the site, as I explained before, has massive advantages, and that's kind of the approach that we used. But you know, anytime you're talking logistics, you're talking money, and so, you know, there's going to come a time where it just simply isn't feasible to be shipping overdimensional product if that's what you're building offsite to really far away locations. In the United States, you know, I'm a foreigner, so you know, I have kind of an outsider's perspective on this. It's a massive economy. It's a massive geographical area, massive. Okay, and the GDP, right? I mean, there's so much money. There's so many people here. The economy is just so large. So you know, clearly, logistics is going to be a very big part of what you do and your business plan.
So now that we've talked about all the bad things, we're going to start going on an upward trajectory here. So everything you talked about really is kind of like trying to herd jello. You know, you got all these things that are wiggling and jiggling and moving. You've got to have good people on your team to do that, right? So you're the COO. How do you... Like, what are the skill sets you're looking for in your successful factory management team? What are the type of people and positions that you're trying to fill to help you manage that jello?
Yeah, I'm happy to answer it. You know, from our perspective, different people might give different answers to this. So at the very top, I'll put grit and perseverance and passion. So having high grit, and no matter what, standing up after you fall down, that's going to have to top the list. So that's the most important thing. Then I'll be honest with you. The second thing is a combination of experience, but not to the extent that it's going to blindside you, right? So what we're doing in this industry is doing things very different, okay? And so, in fact, one of the reasons why, you know, I was connected with Boris and Boris chose to partner up with me to start this company, he said, I really like that you don't know anything. And I go, what do you mean by that? You know, it's probably right, but what do you mean? And he
goes, thanks for coming out and just being honest on our show here.
And that's what I do. I'm honest. So he goes, look, you know, I don't want to have someone tell me how we can't do it. I want to have someone come here and think through the problem, figure it out. And so too many folks in construction, they're just going to tell you, oh, you want to do it this new way. It's just not feasible because this and that, right? So one of our values as a company is we call ourselves an industry definer and first principle thinkers. So that means we start from physics, okay? So can we do that? Matt, if you come in and you say no, whether you're the architect, you're the plumber, you're this, you're that, we're going to ask you why. And as long as you have anything else to say other than because physics laws, like the laws of physics, prevent you from doing that, we're going to call your bluff. You have to have that experience component, especially at the top echelon, but you need to caveat that with you need to be very open-minded.
That is gold. That is gold. And as we go on to close this thing out, and I'm going to leave you guys here. Matt comes in. I love Matt's kind of freestyle, how you asked him to freestyle. So on the closeout coming up, I'm going to give a little freestyle back to Matt to close this thing out. But the question we always ask, and as Anthony, as we've got to know him in the industry, I love how he speaks out and challenges in a way to move this thing forward, right? And when we're always talking about on this podcast as lifelong learners, our goal is to move this ship forward. And to move it forward, you have to be able to kind of see that crystal ball. And as Anthony, you jumped in, what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
Yeah, so let's see. I've got a short-term horizon ball and a longer-term horizon ball. All right. Look, I think that there's a tremendous variety of buildings in construction, and surely not all of them fit the volumetric spectrum or even the panelized spectrum. And there's always going to be buildings that need to be built stick, right? I mean, you're always going to have some buildings that have to be built at the side. But offsite elements are going to grow massively, and it's going to be 2D, 3D, it's going to be subcontractors, it's going to be anything and everything that can be prefabricated. From a labor standpoint, sure, that's going to be a big driving force, you know. Economies of scale, it's going to be, you know, time and money. And that's going to start being implemented more and more along the majority of the construction industries. Now I am hopeful for the future, guys. You know, I really want us to all have some sort of platform to be able to work on. And I'm gonna kind of leave it super generic because that's many years in the future. But have some kind of standardization, you know, in this industry, and how does one group develop technology, develop standards, develop this and that makes sense for them to be embraced from the current stakeholders of this industry, right? How does that seep into day to day, right? How does that work today as opposed to building something isolated and forgetting to integrate it into all of the GCs out there? I mean, those are the guys doing the work. You know, I mean, do it so that they can play ball with it.
Awesome stuff, man. Well, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. It's been super fun for the Art of Construction tribe to get inside of the tent a little bit. Is we usually do a 30-minute pre-interview, and with Anthony, it was three amazing sessions for this podcast today. And the amount of wealth and conversation, we're so gracious to have you come in and sharing your story. But as we pin down on this one thing, if we move forward, what is that one thing, Anthony, that you want to leave the tribe thinking about to go out there and crush it for our contractors and affiliates to go out there and grow their business?
I would say dig deep. If you want to change what you're doing, you know best what it is that you do, and you want to dig deep. If you look into anything system built or want to change something, you will be the best person to know how that will affect you and how that will improve what you're doing. And you got to be willing to ask the deep questions from anybody and everybody who's listening.
Anthony, thank you so much for coming in, digging deep with us, my man.
Absolutely. Great, great being here. And thank you so much, Devin and Matt.
All right, tribe. I have so much bounce around my head. And as Matt, you know, you like all types of music from rap to the 70s, and we've had so much fun. So I'm going to put myself on the spot as I'm going to try to freestyle recap this thing, and then you're going to bring us home with the cliff notes. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. So you asked the question, what is the ideal size? And we get the Art of Construction answer is, it depends. Why is that? Because this stuff is so freaking complicated. Through pit and how many stations and what type of factory. It's all the same stuff we've been trying to figure out all the way back to the beginning of when you and I go to tour the different Frank Lloyd Wright types of homes that I learned these different architectural styles to the different geographical areas around the country when we go to these different factories. No one size fits all. But tribe, unless you know your why. And you have to surround yourself around people like Matt McMullen that knows his why about where he's going and what he's doing around shelter. And then you have to figure out, you got to just get started. And so this is the start. I appreciate how he brought up the pop-up, because we had whole discussions around just get started, pop it up, go for it. But if you don't systemize that, you're going to get your lunch eaten, tribe, because construction is messy. And we always talk about how you have to begin with the end in mind. You have to think about that last mile. Because that last mile, you know what it is? It's the profitability of your business. And so you have to begin with the end in the mind. And he talked about layouts and all that stuff. And that is the art of construction. The art, the artists, the Matt McMullins, the people that make this stuff digitally built to hand the baton. And we're talking about massive stuff here, tribe, massive things like trucking. Just thinking about trucking these boxes to the site. Heck, we're making whole videos and marketing around having podcasts with Stream Logistics and all these cool companies around this. Public service announcement. We stopped and paused because we were going down the reality of this thing. And that's what I love about Anthony, of the reality of to say, it is one thing that has always made the art of construction work. And there's one thing that will always continue to make it work. People. But you have to manage people. But what Anthony challenged us all to think about is to say we have to think differently, and you have to realign maybe some of your commitments in your partnerships, because what is business, Matt, as we had the meeting before this, as I'm looking at the charrettes on the wall here, is business is the art of moving money. That is what business is. But the cost of emotions to create roofs over people's heads, which is why we started this whole thing, is about shelter. if there's one thing that you have to manage in the people to get this through, and Anthony said it, one of my favorite words, passion, baby. You better have passion. And if you have passion with a can-do attitude, I ask you, Tribe, do you want to be the future of construction? And if so, you better dig deep right now and find your why, because it's not easy. Bring us home, Matt.
So, wow, that was like a that was like a jam band extended riff, you know, there. But the other wow is for a guy who doesn't know anything, Anthony sure knows a lot. So that was impressive to hear. The other thing that really touched me was true grit and perseverance and passion. And I'm a visual thinker, so all of a sudden I put together John Wayne with a marathoner and Adele the singer and mashed them together, which was kind of strange. But I totally agree with what he said, is you really do need all three of those qualities. So, Devin, I just want to say thanks for inviting me from the fringes into the inner circle of love for the Art of Construction Tribe. It was a pleasure and an honor to interview Anthony. So we'll talk to you next time.
Awesome. Find your passion, dig deep, have as much fun as possible. Crush it out there, Tribe.